Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But my first guest this morning is Irish screenwriter and director David Frayne, and he's celebrating the release of his new movie, Eternity. It's a rom-com that's getting rave reviews. He brought us beforehand Dating Amber and The Cured, and he's been honoured by IFTA and the Cork Film Festival, with hopefully more awards coming his way for this new movie. Well, David co-wrote Eternity with Pat Conan and filmed it in Canada. But there is another strand to his story that he's going to share with me today, the day he found out about his brain tumour. David Frayne, good morning to you and thanks for joining us.
Morning, thank you for having me.
And congratulations, first of all, on the brilliant movie Eternity. It opened in cinemas last weekend to rave reviews, starring Elizabeth Olsen, Miles Teller and Callum Turner. Now, David, it's about the afterlife and the choice that Elizabeth Olsen's character has to make. Explain.
Yeah, so Eternity is about, it's a woman played by Elizabeth who dies at an old age, and she goes to this place called The Junction. And when she gets there, her husband, who died by choking on a pretzel 2 weeks earlier, is waiting for her, but so is her first husband, who died 67 years ago at war. And so she has the difficult decision as to who to choose to spend her afterlife with. It's a big, funny, romantic comedy.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating premise. And one of the key things I felt about Eternity and Joan's dilemma is there's no baddie. They're all nice, good people, aren't they?
Yeah, which is easy when you have Callum and Miles. But yeah, it was really important that both men are there's no right or wrong answer, that they're both really valid choices. They both represent kind of a great love, just a great love at a different time in our life. And it was really lovely to explore that with those guys, those actors, and kind of discuss kind of what love is to us and kind of reflect on our own lives and our own kind of relationships. So it was a really, really fun, lovely experience to make.
You must be delighted with the reviews, are you, David? I mean, you put so much into a movie and then you never know how it's going to be received, but it's been received so brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you never know. I mean, I think we were just so happy with the film. I think it's a lovely thing when the work, when the film ends up being what you wanted it to be. So I think we were really happy with that. And then the fact that people are enjoying it, that the critics have kind of enjoyed it, and you know, having people reach out to us and say what it's meant to them has been so moving. It's been really, really sweet.
Tell me a little about your path into directing at this high level. I mean, where did you start off?
I mean, I started off as just a 10-year-old boy who kind of watched lots of VHSs and rented things out from Extravision. I remember watching Terminator 2 and just falling in love and figuring out that that's what I wanted to do with my life. And it's just like a lot of Irish filmmakers, it's just a slow process of figuring out how people actually make them and finding like-minded people to make them with. But it's always been my big kind of passion and my big dream to be a filmmaker. So I feel really fortunate that I've managed to do that.
And of course, you did a zombie movie, The Cured, and Dating Amber. It's a coming of age comedy. Did you always want to, though, do a rom-com?
Yeah, I just think they're the best films when they're done well. I mean, going back to Billy Wilder and Lubitsch and those greats, I think they're films that aren't afraid to be really funny and really moving. They don't hold their punches emotionally. And I think they can deal with really serious and deep topics, but with a lightness of touch that I think sometimes film forgets. So yeah, it was a dream come true. The whole project was a real dream. To make a rom-com, to make something set in the afterlife, and to get to build my own world was just kind of extraordinary.
And of course, your brother is Patrick Frayne. He's a fantastic, very funny writer with the Irish Times. I'm thinking about Patrick's book and his description of your childhood as the children of an army dad. I mean, what's your version of that story?
I mean, it's probably very, very similar. I think you know, it's an odd place to kind of grow up near the Curragh, because it is a real Fisher Price town where you're doing your normal childhood things, but there's tanks driving by or soldiers kind of abseiling down buildings. So it's an odd, but lovely, lovely life. And I think our dad, who was such a kind of big force in the army, but he was such a sweet, incredible man and really supported everything we wanted to do. So it didn't feel in any way regimented or in the way you might expect for a military family. So yeah, it was It's a lovely place. It's great.
Yeah, it's such a lovely story. Now, you shot Eternity in Canada, and when you were back in London, David, where you live with your partner, Stephen, you were planning a holiday before the premiere in Toronto. What happened?
Yeah, we rarely go on holiday, and I think it was in July, so it was a couple of months before the premiere, and we just decided that we needed to get away. But I suffer really severe migraines. I've been to the doctor several times and it's always just been dismissed as stress. But I think I couldn't get out of bed and my eyesight started to go. So Steve, literally the day before we were about to fly out, Steve brought me to the eye emergency clinic in Whipps Cross Hospital in London. And within like half an hour of getting there, kind of, it was very clear something serious was wrong. They determined that I had a nerve palsy in my eyes that might be caused by something serious. And we were there the whole day. I was kind of rushed from room to room, kind of from exam to exam with so much kind of speed that I just knew there was something serious going on. And before we'd even got a result, I was crying and telling Steve to try get the flight money back and figuring out, you know, how I might get repatriated back to Ireland for a funeral. And, you know, and it was at that night, it was like 11:39, I remember exactly. And they showed us the CT scan, which had a very large white mass in it. And I thought that was my brain, but they told me it was a tumor. And at that point they had no other information. They didn't know if it was cancerous, if it was operable, and for quite a while that's the only information we really had. But yeah, it was a very devastating and surreal day, and for me and for Steve, and then to have to ring and tell my family, and also because we didn't have a lot of information. I think information kind of began to drip feed out over the next course of a few weeks, really. But yeah, I mean, it was also kind of weirdly validating to know the pain I'd been in hadn't been minor, that I didn't just have a really low pain threshold and that there was something serious going on, because I always suspected it was something more than just migraine. But yeah, it was a very devastating and very bizarre day.
And it's hard to imagine how anyone would react to hearing that diagnosis. I mean, how did you react and how did your partner Stephen react?
I mean, It's kind of out of body experience. I think Steve was very calm. He's a very calm person. I mean, I immediately went to oh, well, I won't get to see my film released after 4 years, which is kind of sad. And yeah, just the practicalities of like, oh, when will people come over? When will we tell our family? You kind of go to those things very, very quickly. And it begins to just slowly sink in that this is potentially fatal and really kind of life altering. And I think the difficult thing is we didn't have a clear picture for quite a while. I think, you know, we would get kind of good news where they think it's one thing and then bad news where it's not that and it's something else. And I was transferred hospitals to the Royal London, and did several tests and was kind of heavily medicated. And it was kind of only over time that you realize this may not be fatal and there may be a path to some sort of recovery. So it was just really surreal, I would say.
And what did the tests eventually show, David? And you had to have surgery. Tell me what it showed and about the surgery.
Yeah, so it showed there was, I mean, they first described it as the size of a lime and then it moved up to the size of an apple. Thankfully, that's where it stopped. They didn't go to melon. And it showed that they still didn't know where it started from. They knew it had broken through the brain. It had kind of crushed my pituitary gland, had kind of crushed my optic nerves, which is why my eyesight was going. And it was in my artery. So they knew it was really big, but they thought there was they imagined there was a way they could operate it, either through the side of the head or through the nose, to at least relieve the pressure from the tumor. And so that's what they kind of chose to do. And then once they had it out, then they would be able to determine if it was or wasn't cancerous. But they suspected it probably wasn't, which is good. I think they used the the term aggressively benign, which meant it was incredibly dangerous, but not hopefully not cancerous. And doctors are incredible. They give you all the worst case scenarios because they have to, but they're very calm. They're very great, and they're always kind of looking at the best course of action. And I felt a real sense of calm in the hospital. I think once the shock kind of wore off, I felt quite kind of contented with the whole prospect of everything. I mean, having just made eternity and thought about death for 4 years, I think I really did approach it with curiosity rather than dread. I mean, I think that became the, and also just having been really kind of happy with what I, you know, with the film and my work so far, it didn't feel like a bad one to go out on. And, you know, you kind of really, I think when you get very sick, you really, really quickly learn how many people love you and the amount of people that surround you from family to friends. It's extraordinary. And you do feel like you have made an impact on people and people have made an impact on you. And, you know, every life is a short life. And if yours is going to be slightly shorter than you would like, maybe that's okay. So I became very kind of calm about it quite quickly.
So interesting. And of course, your parents, your siblings, your friends, they all sprang into action.
Yeah. Everyone was incredible. My parents moved over essentially into our house for about a month. And then Patrick and Maria, my siblings, they kind of tag teamed over for the same period and during the surgery. And then just friends visiting all the time and questioning the doctors with stupid ChatGPT results. And it was really like, I mean, I wouldn't recommend faking it, but you really do kind of discover how many people care about you. It was really amazing.
And I love the fact, I read this, you wrote it, that, you know, you were in a ward in that great hospital, the Royal, but you didn't mind that. You saw it as a positive to have company.
I mean, I didn't think I would have anything other than a ward, but there's a real camaraderie that that kind of occurs there. And it was a ward, it was a high dependency ward for people with, so mostly the people there had brain tumors or something catastrophic in that respect. And so you get to kind of share stories. I mean, there was a lovely young man in the bed next to me, Nabil. And I remember I had really bad visual hallucinations one night. And the next morning he was like, oh, I heard you had your hallucinations. And then we just compared our hallucinations for a couple of hours because he had them too. And like, that was really lovely and extraordinary and quite profound to experience. And then just seeing their family members and how many people kind of come in and the amount of kindness you see in a hospital is a really sweet thing. I mean, it was my first big experience with the NHS in England, and it was kind of incredible to see how wonderful the nurses are, the nursing assistants, the doctors, just how much care and empathy they put into everything. And there's those moments where, you know, where you're very vulnerable, where you can't move, you can't even bathe yourself. And there's always that feeling of almost being undignified, but they give you so much dignity in everything they do. They really just make you feel the best you can in those moments. And yeah, I found that all incredibly moving.
Yeah, I think, is it the eighth wonder of the world, you called it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And the surreal thing, though, is the surgery was planned, David, but your film, Eternity, which you'd worked so hard and was ready for release, there was this small matter of a premiere in Toronto.
And
you made that.
Yeah, they let me out of hospital for a couple of weeks while they planned the surgery because I didn't know the route, and I was heavily, heavily medicated. And at first they said I wouldn't be able to travel, but I think I responded to the medication quite well. And again, my surgeons being so great, they knew how much that meant to me. So they allowed me get to Toronto to make the premiere just for like 48 hours. And it was so brilliant. I mean, I wasn't able to do a lot of the things, the press that you would want to do because I wasn't well enough, but I got to introduce the film to a room of 1700 people. I got to sit in the audience and like hear them laugh and cry. And I got to celebrate with my cast and crew that I dearly love. And it was really special to have that experience and that moment. It felt brilliant.
Did it feel a bit surreal as well, though?
Well, it did. And it was kind of also quite surreal because you're, you know, some people know what you've been through and some people don't. So you're trying to hide. Like, you're like, do they just think I'm being an arsehole because I won't do any press? So you're trying to kind of conceal it to some people and then be very open with others. But it was really lovely. And it felt like a completion of the whole process. And I felt now that I'd seen the film almost birthed into the world in a way. Yeah. So that was quite lovely.
Now, you went back, you had the surgery, which must have been terrifying. Talk me through your recovery, because I think it went well, didn't it, David?
Yeah, no, it did. The surgery was, you know, 10 hours, which is obviously terrifying not for me, because I was unconscious, but for my family and Stephen, who kept going into the hospital to see if I was done or not, which is sad. It's a really slow recovery. You can't move for the first week. It's excruciating pain. You're, you know, on all sorts of drugs and morphine. And then slowly machines are taken away and wires are taken away and you kind of begin to feel better. But it isn't slow and steady. It really is up and down. I think you feel like you're getting better and then you might collapse in agony. And it was around the 6 week mark that you just miraculously begin to feel yourself again, which was nice. And then it's just slowly getting better from there. But it went as well as the doctors would have hoped and expected. They managed to kind of decompress it and take most of it out. And, you know, and suddenly all the doom in which you've been treating this for the last couple of months begins to look much more positive and optimistic. And you begin to imagine like, oh, I might make more films and I might get to do this and that, which is great.
Yeah, which is absolutely brilliant. And you're a philosophical kind of guy, David. You have a very good sense of humour, like your brother. You do write comedy. Was that helpful through all of this, like your mindset?
Yeah, I don't know how helpful it is, but it's the only way you can deal with these things. But yeah, I think you have to have a kind of a pretty morbid sense of humour. And I definitely get to win a lot of arguments by saying, shut up, I have a brain tumor, which is quite nice now. But yeah, I think it's a coping mechanism and it does help. And having just my family around me who are innately funny people is always really lovely and it does get your mind off things. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, exit is an entrance. I think that's how I always approached it. And I'm not a religious person necessarily, but I do think there might be something next. And I was excited by kind of, oh, well, that's an adventure.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted it all turned out so well. Finally, I mean, what's ahead of you now in terms, does there have to be further treatment or is it for now?
I know there's going to be some further treatment, but all with a very kind of optimistic view to it. I think it's, you know, I'll have some sort of treatment for a while, but I'm excited now to kind of get onto the next film and project. And I think it's given me a new lease of life. And it's also made me really reflect on the stories I want to tell and the type of films I want to make, which has been lovely. So yeah, it's all really kind of brilliant and optimistic. I think from a few months ago where it seemed incredibly dark, I think we're now at a point where we're seeing a really kind of exciting future.
Oh, well, it's brilliant. It's like a movie in itself, your story, honestly. David Frayne.
Yeah, I won't make it. But
I'm so thrilled for you listening. Thanks so much for chatting to me this morning. Congrats on your movie, Eternity. It's absolutely fabulous, getting all the brilliant reviews it deserves. Thanks so much for joining us, David. We'll take a break.